Over the last 5 to 10 years, and likely longer, the term burnout has popped up in numerous articles related to many professions, but particularly in the COVID and post-pandemic years, the term has played a significant role in addressing the healthcare industry. Today we have with us Dr. Sue Paternak, who earned a Doctor of Education, Organizational Change and Leadership from the University of Southern California, and has spent many years in corporate leadership, executive coaching, organizational consulting, and academic teaching experience. Her research focused on physician burnout in the COVID-19 pandemic, healthcare organization and leadership implications for patient care and clinical team leadership with nurses. I'm also happy to say that she's recently been added to the American Lung Association's National Board of Directors. I can think of no one better to discuss this topic, so thank you for being with us today, Dr. Paternak.
Thank you so much, Dr. Rizzo. It's an honor to be here and to be serving on the National Board as well.
Thank you. So just so we and our listeners are on the same page, could you please give us the definition of burnout that we're going to be discussing today?
Sure. Where I'd like to begin is actually burnout's opposite, which is well-being, because that's another term that's thrown out there that there's a lot of confusion about. So there are actually two constructs of well-being, and then that will lead into our discussion about burnout. One is this fancy term called hedonic well-being, like think of hedonism. You know, it's associated with momentary experiences of pleasure and joy. So it's kind of seeking of the nice things in life and avoiding the bad things and the bad feelings. As opposed to another kind of well-being called eudaimonic well-being, which is longer term and more sustainable. And it's associated with this having a sense of purpose and meaning and growth and self-actualization and contribution. And that could be for anything in life, from being a parent and raising great children to becoming a physician and being associated with the healing and promotion of well-being and physical well-being in patients, to one of mine, which is as being an educator in the corporate world. So eudaimonic well-being actually can sustain us, you know, when in the absence of hedonic, right? So the reason why I mention that is because Medscape did a study in 2022, published in 2023, on pulmonologists' lifestyle, happiness, and burnout. It was about a 60-40 male-female split, about 9,200 physicians across 29 specialties. Before COVID in 2019, these pulmonologists were at the top of the happiness scale. 89% reported being either happy or very happy with their lives. And since COVID in 2022, that 89% has dropped down to 59%. Boom. So considering that we're on LungCast, I thought it would be, you know, helpful to throw out pulmonologist data for every once in a while. Though the numbers for the general population were pre-COVID about 3/4 happy to very happy, and about 50%, less than 50% after since COVID. So the construct of burnout was actually arose from research on the impact of workplace stressors on mental health in the workplace. And that resulted in a codification of burnout in the original research, as well as in assessments of burnout from the original thinkers about this, which was Christina Maslach and Michael Lauder from Stanford University. And their definition was adopted by the World Health Organization. So first of all, burnout is an occupational phenomenon. Now, people might say, well, I'm burnout dealing with my teenagers. There might be something going on with your teenagers, but burnout is not one of them, right? You might be tired, but that's not what burnout applies to, right?
Got it.
So it's an occupational phenomenon, and it is also not a mental or medical illness. So that's why we don't talk about depression when we associate it. Now, it doesn't mean it doesn't lead to depression. It certainly can, and it certainly does. which we'll talk a little bit about with suicidal ideation. But for the purposes of our discussion about burnout, we're going to stay within the context of this that's defined as not being a medical or mental illness. But it is a syndrome that's the result of chronic workplace stressors that is unsuccessfully managed. And unsuccessfully managed is really critical. Because having just workplace stressors, right, especially for physicians and healthcare workers in general, these are some of the most resilient people ever.
Right.
Having gone through all of their training and doing what you do, right? These are not people who are easily, you know, distracted or distorted. So unsuccessfully managed is the key to all of this.
Got it.
It's characterized by three components. And any one of these components can exist by themselves. Often they come together. So the first one has to do with exhaustion. Physical, cognitive, and emotional exhaustion. So that's when, if you've got that I'm tired feeling, that's mm-hmm. part of it. The second is what we call mental distance, or that depersonalization or cynicism and negative thinking. That's when you get to the I've had it, I don't care anymore, right? And the third is a decrease in professional efficacy. So that's that feeling of, I know I could do better, but I just can't be at my best. Sometimes that's the fallout from the first two. Sometimes it's systemic. For example, you can have physicians saying that because of cost consciousness, there have been policies that were set by non-physician leaders that is mitigating their medical judgments in situations that are out of the norm, right? But they can make exceptions because of that. So sometimes it's systemic, and sometimes it's because of their individual experiences. So to kind of put a bow on the end of this, the U.S. Surgeon General, Vice Admiral Vivek Murthy, really said it succinctly when he said that burnout manifests in people, but it originates in systems.
That's a great definition to start with. And you anticipated a few of my questions that I'm going to follow up with.
Good.
in preparation for this discussion, I did run across the important distinction between being stressed and being burned out. And I'd like you to comment a little bit more on that. And also, if you want to reiterate the fact that stress and burnout can lead to depression, but that's certainly a different issue altogether. So just a little more about the difference between stress and burnout.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. And truthfully, the research is mixed on this. You know, the definition that I cited and the research that was done by Christina Maslach and others from Stanford, such as Tate Schoenfeld, the work of the Mayo Clinic, et cetera, do not conflate it or mix it. But there are constructs in which burnout is a subcategory of stress. And there's other research that would even say that there really the overlap is so great that there isn't really a substantive mm-hmm. difference to warrant a separate
right.
definition. So with all of that, though, I think that the work that was done up at Stanford does a really good job of parsing out some of the differences. Getting kind of maybe to the end, I would say if you're not sure whether you're stressed or burnt out, don't stress yourself out about defining it. You know, get some help.
Right. Bottom line,
so
get some help, right?
Having said that, don't twist yourself into a pretzel trying to figure it out. So let's start with stress. So while the feelings of sadness can be associated with both burnout and stress, stress is more also tends to be associated with fear and anxiety in anticipation or in response to anticipating workplace stressors or in response or reaction to surprises. So stress is more of a high energy experience. It can also be quite performative. So with that, there are two kinds of stress that are really important to think about. So there's just like I talked about eudaimonic with the first two words, U-E-U-U means good. There's also eustress. So EU and the word stress. So that's a good stress. and it's associated with high degrees of focus and engagement and readiness associated with that subjective well-being. Like that feeling that athletes get when they're in the playoffs and they're running on the field, or musicians get when they're walking on the stage, or surgeons get when they're walking into the OR. Right. So people will often even talk about the feeling of being amped. So it's a high energy, eustress is a high energy in the zone. That's usually associated with positive emotions such as confidence and pride. Okay. Makes sense. That's eustress. Of course, what we're really focused on is the other kind of stress, which is distress. Okay. So distress, of course, is the bad stress associated with elevated cortisol levels, which I don't have to tell you or your audience, but that's like termites on a house on the body, on the wear and tear in the body. And that's in response to real or perceived environmental stressors. And this, you know that in the immediate reaction to sudden change is really what distress is for, right? Those elevated cortisol levels are supposed to get us into that fight or flight, activate right. The amygdala, right? And shut down the judgments and just kind of go. So if we're jamming on the brakes in the car, or we're grabbing the baby and running out of the house when the fire alarm goes, that's what distress is supposed to be for, that urgency. But the kind of stress you're talking about is the distress that we carry with us over a long period of time. So that, again, elevated levels of fear, anxiety, anger, disgust can all be associated with that kind of stress. As you can imagine, because distress is high energy and highly performative, we're overtaxing, we're overusing our internal resources. So there's so at some point there's an imbalance between our internal capacity and the demands of the external environment. And so that's where kind of that distress can lead into burnout, which now that leads us into our definition our distinction with burnout. So burnout is more of a low energy experience. So where the term burnout came from, interestingly, is using the analogy of a match. I don't even know if everybody knows what a match is anymore. But if you don't know, Google it. So just think of when you strike a match, you know, it burns, right. But eventually the fuel that's at the tip of it runs out. And so we say that the match is burned out. So it's out of fuel. So the experience of burnout is our tank is empty. We're out of fuel.
Got it.
So referencing our discussion of eudaimonic, the good well-being, burnout seems to be associated not with the absence of hedonic, absence of good feelings, but it's associated with loss, right? It's a loss of that eudaimonic. It's a loss of meaning, purpose, growth, identity, agency, influence, control, significance, importance, accomplishment, and even, dare I say, heroism in some professions, right? Physicians are part of that, not alone. Firefighters, right. Police officers, some teachers, right? All have that, you know, we have a higher purpose, a higher calling that's associated with that. And so when we're asking ourselves questions, do I matter? Do I belong? Am I good enough? Can I show up? Am I even being seen? Or am I being seen the way I see myself? Or the way I have been seen in the past, but I'm no longer being seen? Those can be associated with feelings of burnout. According to that Medscape study that I referenced earlier in 2022, 42% of pulmonologists reported burnout having a severe impact on their lives. And 33% said it was moderate. So only 25% said it was none. So I hope that helps with the distinction.
Oh, it definitely does. And I guess we're talking a lot about the fact that emotion plays a big role here. But also, again, in my readings, I know that on the way to burnout or when you've gotten to burnout, there also can be manifestations other ways, physical symptoms and signs, behavioral symptoms or signs, along with the emotions you mentioned and combinations of those. Can you comment on those manifestations that may show themselves up in individuals?
Yes, certainly. So I'll kind of distinguish them between performance, physical health, and mental and emotional health. So we'll kind of break them out, and those will all, you know, kind of allude to some behavioral. So from a performance standpoint, and as you read in my my dissertation, I talked about and studied medical error implications, right? Mm-hmm. So there definitely is an increase in injuries, accidents, and medical errors, along with a reduction in patience with patients. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's a reduction in creativity and innovation, and we know that physicians absolutely bring their creativity and judgment to every situation, because every situation isn't necessarily textbook. So you absolutely have to be diagnostically thinking creatively, as well as treatment plan thinking creatively. So because of the heightened amygdala activity, right? So I could talk that way with this group. You know, that's going to suppress creativity, innovation, the executive functions of the prefrontal cortex, right? So you'll tend to also see more kind of interpersonal conflicts in, you know, within work teams. You'll see increased absenteeism and turnover, distracted thinking, and indifference and depersonalization that can kind of come with the needs of patients as well as the medical team. You know, so when nurses are taking directions from physicians regarding the treatment plans for their patients, you know, is that a doctor that you need to stay away from? You know, just so if you see two doctors making the same prescription, you know, for the same patient, or that they're going to be double medicated, hey, it's their problem to work out, not mine, because I don't want to get yelled at.
Right.
So you will see
right.
that. So that's performative. Physical health, to be honest, I haven't seen a whole lot of difference in the literature between the physical manifestations of stress versus burnout.
Okay.
Right. So it's all of the things that you can imagine: gastrointestinal, cardiovascular, right? Pain onset and perception, mm-hmm. sleep disorders, immune system, et cetera, et cetera. Mental health. So disillusionment is kind of part of that second point that I was saying about dissociation. So it's disillusionment about the job and the organization and right. the leaders. And when it gets to the choice of medicine as career, now you're getting into, is this person going to turn over? Are there self-harm ideations that are happening? So you can see increases in compassion fatigue. So I think you've probably seen a lot of that in the literature, when we're not required to sympathize, because sympathy is I feel what you feel, I feel the same pain, but doctors are certainly being asked to empathize, which is understanding and seeing other people's pain and issue, even if I don't feel it myself, right. or even agree with it in some way, shape, or form. But even with empathy, you can get empathy and compassion fatigue. Cognitive overload. Right. So how much do we need to pull together between all of the, and we'll talk later about how this is systemic, right? You know, all of the organizational and policy and technical right. and administrative, you know, burdens that are put on the physician that kind of take away from all of the tension on just what's going on with the patient. There can be feelings of not feeling appreciated, feeling isolated, disrespected, loss of control. Where it starts to really slip, and we know this from the first article in the New York Times in 2020 with the death by suicide of Dr. Lorna Breen. Right. So that was really a wake up call for everyone. She was quite the star physician and cardiologist. One in 10 physicians in 2022 considered or attempted suicide, and primarily associated with medical errors and high workloads resulting in physical exhaustion and impaired interpersonal relationships. So for leaders, so I'll kind of pull this together. For leaders, signs to be aware of in your workforce are 63% of physicians, Physicians are 63% more likely to take a sick day and 23% more likely to visit the emergency room when they're burned out.
Right.
And they're 2.5 times more likely to leave. And so this is a crisis. And, sure. We also know that there's a projected physician shortage in the United States already. Rural areas, there are many, many medical deserts in this country, and it's just getting worse as people are getting more populated in the urban environments. We know that there'll be a shortage of about 224,000 physicians by 2034. And I'm not going to go into the details of this, but if anybody wants to Google Healthcare Finance News 2022 article, the annual cost estimates of burnout-related physician turnover in the United States is estimated at $5 billion between direct and indirect costs.
Some sobering facts and some big numbers.
So
I know you don't want to go into details, but knowing how the COVID pandemic exacerbated burnout in the healthcare industry, should there be or are there steps that the industry should recognize and start to take to help prevent this from happening again when we know the next pandemic is going to arrive?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I think when we think about the things to do, it helps to gather data about what some of the causes are. So if anybody's interested in Googling the U.S. Surgeon General's report, the 2022 report on healthcare industry burnout, Dr. Murthy does a really good job of encapsulating the entire ecosystem. So it starts at the kind of societal cultural level and goes into the healthcare system and then organizational implications like systems and policies, and then leadership, the work unit, and then at the individual level. So there are many, many, there's a myriad of causes. But what I can say is, and I'm going to do a shameless plug for the latest book from Drs. Maslach and Leiter, The Burnout Challenge. They did a really good job of calling out the common themes that are actually actionable by individuals and organizations. So they start with, and I know this won't be a surprise to you because we've talked about this, the unsustainable high workloads.
Right.
Now, of course, if there's a shortage, what are you going to do, right? There are a lot. So some of the creative options out there include using telemedicine when you can, using nurse practitioners when you can. I believe that there are some states that are elevating their nurse practitioner licensing to be able to take on some of the workload and some of the roles that physicians have taken on. So to kind of spread the work a little bit. Also, there's still a gross underrepresentation of Black and Brown members of our community in the physician talent pool. By identifying talent, right, in underrepresented communities, also Indigenous peoples as well, to be interested in this work, can help to fortify, the supply, of physicians. Right now the majority are still Caucasian, with the next population Asian in the United States. The next one that they talk about is insufficient choice and control. So that ranges from everything from what their work hours are, right? So if you're somebody who has said, hey, I put in 3 months ago for my kids, band performance, right? And you now scheduled me the exact time I can't do it. You're now asking me to choose, right? And when you get the, sorry, we're short-staffed kind of a thing, that has wear and tear, right? And that reduces efficacy. And control, as we said, things like policies that are set without physician input. They're not saying, hey, we shouldn't look at cost-cutting. Of course, we need to look at cost-cutting. What medical input is part of the decision-making about these different things, about the ways that we're dispensing medications and the exceptions that we're allowed to make. So
Absolutely.
those are the kinds of things. Who's on their medical team, et cetera, et cetera. So the next one is what they call ungratifying rewards and recognition. So I had one physician in my study say to me, you know, I don't need your $100 bonus. You know, I don't even need your $500 bonus. I need time off, right? I need you to stop eating into my vacation time.
Right.
You know, I need you to leave me alone. I don't want to go on a staff retreat and party with people. I want to get away from all you people. Right.
No, the work-life balance. You're right. It's absolutely correct.
Yeah. And well, by the way, and there were other people who were starved for that kind of connection. So what that basically says, and got, didn't get enough of it, and were feeling isolated. So what that says is one size doesn't fit all. Right? What's rewarding and recognizing for you might not be for me. So that's where, you know, collecting data about your workplace and identifying and about, and I'm providing options and have people opt in.
Right.
The fourth of the six is an unsupportive work community, right? So some of the findings in my research was, you know, some of the issues associated with how traveling nurses are received within these organizations, right? So traveling nurses, many of whom used to be staff nurses, right, exercised their plan B because they couldn't get the hours that they needed. So they decided to go this route, but now there's resentment because they do make more money.
Right.
They do kind of come in and they're not as vested and they're not as loyal. But at the end of the day, they are part of the team. Right. And so while they're part of the team, they're not being oriented and onboarded and given the resources, you know, as if they were a staff person. So that how is that person going to be in the OR or in the ER,
right,
especially early times? You know, and that's just, again, I'm just giving you examples. There's many examples. The fifth one is dissatisfaction with the norms of fairness and respect and justice. So that can be anything from promises for childcare for the younger female physicians who still are working the second shift at home and needing to bear the burden of childcare. Promises not met, so getting that support in any way, especially, by the way, shockingly during COVID.
Right.
Right. To, you know, physicians of color experiencing microaggressions, you know, whether it's from leadership or the team's placement in terms of schedules, et cetera, et cetera. And the last one is the non-alignment of their own values to the meaning of work. So it's how the organization finds explains meaning of work, which is more going to be more about efficiency and cost and compliance. But what are, you know, the organization's values and the physician's meaning of work, you know, which is health promotion, disease prevention and treatments, right? And quality time, you know, for the care of their patients. So the other part that can come into play is when patients and families insist on the dis and misinformation that they're getting from social media, et cetera. So there's a lot of public health mis- and disinformation that come into the office and cause families and patients to be hostile and disrespectful and uncooperative. So many physicians have said, hey, you know what, at the beginning of COVID, especially because this got amplified during COVID, I tried to appeal to people, appeal to their logic, appeal to their emotions, appeal. But after people just, you know, spewing ugliness, we'll just put it that way, many physicians have just said, look, I will try once. And if they're not in, you know, I'm out.
Right.
Now that's an understandable but response, but it's also, but that's burnout, right?
Yep.
That's burnout.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I hope that gives you like some winnowing down of some of the issues that are out there.
No question. I think, as I said at the beginning, you know, burnout is not new, but certainly COVID exacerbated the situation. And certainly, as you're talking, it doesn't sound like the reasons for burnout are going to go away, especially in the healthcare industry. So this has been a really important topic for not only the physicians and nurses, allied health professionals, but also the people who run the healthcare systems and make the governmental policies that are going to affect healthcare. So I think this has been a great discussion. Hopefully individuals will realize if they're in that space toward burnout, or they'll figure out what they have to do to help get rid of that potential. I would like to make sure we get some of those references you talked about.
Sure.
Those would be helpful to our audience. And again, just thank you for the time you spent today on a topic that doesn't always get the airplay that it needs.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Dr. Paternak for helping to analyze physician burnout in a way not dissimilar from our best expert guest researchers. If you're interested in hearing more Lungcast breakdowns of public health crises, you should check out our indoor air quality episode with Dr. Mark Hernandez, or our long COVID interview with Dr. Julia Moore Vogel, each published last year. Be sure again to subscribe and rate Lungcast on your preferred listening or watching platform, and visit lung.org and hcplive.com for more news and resources. Until next time, I'm Dr. Albert Rizzo, reminding you that if you can't breathe, nothing else matters. Thank you.